here today is about, was Yaakov Avinu a mummy? Was he considered a mummy? Now, it's a very, very strange pasuk. After Yaakov dies, this is Perek. Oh, perfect. Yeah, this is what my, this is why my father comes to this year. Perek Nun, toward the beginning it says, Yaakov had passed away. By Yichal Yaakov Letzavus, his son of Yaakov had finished commanding his children. By Yasof Raglav Lamikar, he gathered his legs to the bed and lied down on the bed. By Yigba, that's a strange word. The word really means, and he perished. But it's not a good translation. By Yigba, Gevia really doesn't have a translation from Hebrew to English. By Yosef Al Amav, and he was gathered to his nation. And he was, meaning he was buried or some type of death. It's a very strange wording in that it doesn't say the word by Yamas and that he died like it does by others. Rather, it says by Yigva, by Yosef Alamo. That's that. There's the next passage. By Yipo Yosef Al Pnei Aviv. Yosef fell on the face of his father. By Yitkalav, and he cried over him. By Yishaklo, and he kissed his father. There's a big argument on whether or not you're allowed to kiss somebody after one's death, after the person has passed away. But Yosef Asada clearly did. He did so to Yaakov, his father. Vaitzav Yosef is avodah, and he commanded Yosef, he commanded his servants, esarofim, the doctors, lachanot es aviv, to embalm his father. Vayachantu harofim es Yisrael, and the doctors embalmed Yaakov. That's what they did. They embalmed him, and they put him in some type of an embalming period. We'll talk about that, but that's what they did in order to get around. In Pasuk Gimel says, Vayimlu lo arboyim yom, 40 days this was going on. For 40 days, they did the refu, everything they needed. Zuki came yimlu yimei achanutim, because that's how long this type of thing takes. Vayivku oso mitzrayim shivim yom. For 70 days, that's these 40 plus another 30, the Egyptians mourned him. Even they considered him to be a holy man, and that happened. Now, it's a little bit different from the very, very end of Sefer Bereishis. At the very, very end, it says that when Yosef died, when Yosef passed away, by Yomas Yosef ben Meav Asrashanim, he died at 110, by Yachantu Oso, and they embalmed him as well, by Yisem Ba'aron b'Mitzrayim, and they put him in a coffin in Egypt, and they placed him inside a coffin inside Egypt. Now, the embalming process, what exactly is it? I'm not going to go through details, not while you're eating, so you don't have to worry about that. I will try to skip over most of the gory details, but regardless, Rashi on this pasuk says, lachnot es aviv, in order to embalm his father, inyan merkachas besamimu. The subject matter, what we're referring to over here, is a way of spicing up the person, to make sure that the person does not have any rotting or anything like that, that the person remains fresh for as long as it could possibly be. Now, we all know that the Egyptians were very good at embalming people and mummification process. The mummification process was tremendous. Now, what they used to do is not something that we're going to be able to say at this table over here. That's not something that is that's not lunch material. But I will tell you that the Miyam Loes brings down a whole process of what this embalming is, in which if you don't go the Egyptian way, the root that normal people use is the following. A lot of spices are mixed together with many oils. They are poured into the mouth of the person who has passed away, and it spreads out throughout his body. Instead of just being through the esophagus and going into the stomach area, apparently there are holes that are formed inside the body, and it goes throughout the entire body. They anoint the body from head to toe with special parthenone oil and other different types of oils, and they do this for a total of 40 days, softening the body and getting the body ready, making sure that everything is together in that way. There are other methods in which they take the body and they do an autopsy, and by doing the autopsy they reconfigure all the different innards or everything that's inside. They clean everything out and then put everything back, and they do that as well until everything is done and there are spices involved and everything like that. And they would even shrink the body a little bit. They had a process in which everything would be shrunk down so that it wouldn't be as potent. There would be no, the limbs would not have problems of swelling or things like that. They would purposely shrink it down so that the person would be available. Now, the Egyptians did a little bit more than that. They used to bandage the bodies. Now, the bandages were also filled with oils as well as spices, and they used to bandage up the body using linen. Linen grew in abundance by the Nile River. In fact, the Hebrew word for the Nile River is Pishon, which the Yalkut Ruvani says is connected to the word Pishton because of the flax that grew by the Nile River itself. And they were well known, the Egyptians, for their linen throughout the times of the Gemara. It says all the different things that they had and what they were able to do. It was a tremendous wisdom that they had. In fact, we see from the pasuk itself that when Yosef became the king over Egypt, when he became the second in command to Paro, they gave him linen clothing. They gave him bigdei sheish, linen clothing that he put on, along with a huge golden chain, a revid hazov, that went around his neck. But it was done specifically, the clothing and everything they did with the mummification process dealt with linen. Now, the Egyptians were amazing people. Absolutely amazing people. I've never been to Egypt. I don't really want to ever go to Egypt, to be honest with you. But I've seen the pictures. The pyramids that they were able to make is an unbelievable feat. An unbelievable feat. Now, I'm going to concentrate specifically on the Great Pyramid of Giza. But when we talk about what they had, the Great Pyramid of Giza, we're talking about almost 700 feet tall. 700 feet tall. We're talking about a building that was made with massive stones. Some of them almost 10 to 15 tons large that they were able to move into place from very far away. The stones used to make the pyramid are not indigenous to Egypt. They're all the way down the Nile River, and they had to bring it up and then put them all together. The way that they configured it is an exact a mathematic equation in which it is exactly equal on north and south and west and east, although it's not exactly a square. It's close enough to be where north and south are equal lengths, west and east are equal lengths, and they're similar to one another, but then as we all know, it's a pyramid. It goes straight up. The Satmar Rebbe, Rav Yoel Misatmar, used to say that there was a chachma, a wisdom to these pyramids that was in the art of preservation, and that these pyramids had the ability to keep things fresh. Now, I happened to be a shochet. I was bored, and I figured if I love animals so much, I might as well learn how to feed them correctly. So one time I decided that I was going to become a shochet, and I learned it. There's an amazing thing about knives. When you become a shochet, you have to constantly sharpen them. The reason why you have to constantly sharpen them is because it dulls just from being out in the air. The way the Gemara puts it is from moonlight. Moonlight has the ability to knock down something, just whatever it is that's really, really sharp on the knife itself, to the point where it dulls just by sitting out in the open. But there's a test that the Satmar Rebbe did, and he found that knives do not become dull when they're put near a pyramid or inside a pyramid. That nothing like that happens. Now, the art of preservation is known just from the mummification process. There are cats that have been found in different catacombs of the pyramids. They have not discovered every bit of all the secrets of the pyramids. They can't. There's just too much. But in some of the pyramids, they found cats who are so well preserved. It's as if they've died over the past few years as opposed to thousands of years ago. The mummies that were found in pyramids, in which there were airtight and everything around, were fresh mummies that only when they took them out were there problems with them starting to rot or starting to crumble and things like that. But the mummies themselves, while they're in the pyramids, have a fresh look and a fresh everything to them, to the point where they were preserved almost perfectly by this process. The Satmar Rebbe himself used to carry a two-scale model of a pyramid, and he used to have it in his room, in his office in New York. He used to have a two-scale pyramid model, obviously not as big, that would be hard, but he had a very smaller pyramid that he used to keep inside, and he used to have it in there. I mean, it's amazing. I looked up a little bit when it came to these things, and I looked it up online. Batteries become fresher when they're near pyramids. I don't know if it's a lasting effect or just a temporary effect, but batteries can refreshen when they're near the pyramid itself. There are other little things that can happen over there. Now, no one knows what the pyramids were for. There's no positive... Every person who has an opinion, they all bring down their own opinions and everything out there of what the pyramids were exactly used for. Two main theories were that, number one, it was used as storage for, I should say three theories, storage, for astrology, or for the dead. Now, we also don't know exactly when the pyramids were built. We have lines from all these different people who went down to Egypt and then wrote about it later, but they may have gotten the dates a little bit wrong. It seems that the Jews were not involved in the building of the pyramids. They were involved, as the Pasuk tells us, in building Pisom and Ramses, which were other cities outside, but not necessarily in the building of the pyramids. It seems the pyramids were built by slaves before the Jews ever came there. There is a Josephus, a line that Josephus writes, in which Abraham, originally went down to Egypt to teach them all about the science of mathematics, as well as astrology and astronomy. It could be that around the time that Abraham came down was the time that they figured out the concept of the pyramid. And maybe even Avram explained to them the powers of the pyramid, in which the Egyptians took it upon themselves to utilize that information, created the pyramids as something for their dead, or at least a few of them as something for their dead, and then afterward, they understood there was such a huge wisdom behind it, they allowed all the mummies to be buried inside there and kept them fresh. Yosef, when he was in Egypt, seemed to use them as storage houses for the grain. We know that there were 7 years of famine that were supposed to be after the 7 years of satiety, and we know that Yosef was in charge of gathering the grain. It seems likely that he used the pyramids to be able to preserve the grain. If the pyramids have this preserving quality, this ability to keep things fresh, even when everything else is gone, then it's likely that he used the pyramids not only for keeping the dead, but also to keep the grain inside, that they were massive silos, and that's what they used them for while they were down there. But our specific line is that they were using them for the dead itself, and that they kept things in there and that they were preserved. Now, I can understand why the Egyptians, who respected the dead so much, why they would have the mummification process, and why they would do that for their dead, to give them honor, to give them respect by having their bodies whole right there in front of them. That makes sense. The question is, how do you apply that to Yaakov? Why would Yosef have ever allowed that to happen to his father and then to happen to himself? Why would that process be allowed to be done? What was the point of making that happen? Now, the Or HaChaim is Reb Chaim Ibn Attar. He lived in the early 1700s. He was a Sephardic Rav who moved to Israel at the end of his life. He gives three answers as to why he had done such a thing. Number one, out of honor, that this was honorable in Egypt. And had Yaakov not been given the embalming process, had he not been given it, it would have seemed sacrilege to the Egyptians, and they would have seemed insulted. Yosef, being the leader of Egypt, knew that this was considered holy, and this was considered normal, and something precious for them, and therefore allowed it to happen to his father, so as not to insult the people there, even though he wasn't planning on leaving Yaakov's body there. They were planning on bringing it to Israel. He allowed it to happen in order for that to happen. That's number one. But number two, he says, it's so the Egyptians wouldn't be fooled. See, Yaakov is a great, great man. And the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, that there are many people who, I shouldn't say many, six people whose bodies never rotted. One of them is Yaakov. Yaakov is in that list. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam are the six that are there. Yaakov's body never rotted. Yosef may have known this. And if he knew it, that means he wouldn't mummify. He wouldn't need to mummify Yaakov's body. He would be fresh and he would be fine as he was. But the Egyptians, who believed in idols, had they seen a body that was going to have to wait in Egypt for a little bit until they could bring it to Israel, they saw a body that was preserved perfectly, that would not rot, that nothing was happened to it. If they saw that, then it's extremely likely that they would treat such a body as a god. And Yosef was worried that allowing the body to naturally just not rot, for everything to be the normal way, he said, I can't let that happen. The Egyptians are going to see something different. So what did he do? He mummified. He allowed the mummification process to happen to allow people to think that it was the mummification process that was allowing Yosef's body to remain preserved, and not just that Yaakov was a tremendous person. That's number two. there are Gemaras about other people that did not, after death, that their bodies did not decompose. But all of those Gemaras seem to be that it's in a limited basis. Here, the Gemara, when it refers to these six, it refers to permanently. There was never anything that happened to them. The third one is a very, very interesting shot. Says the Or HaChaim that when the Jews came to Har Sinai, from that point on, great men and great tzaddikim did not have decomposition after death. But the people beforehand did have something. And although we don't know exactly what it was, there was something that happened to their bodies. And this is what happened to Yosef, to Yaakov Avinu. That Yaakov Avinu would have had some type of decomposition. There would have been something that went down. And because of that, Yosef said, let's let the mummification process happen so that Yaakov is not embarrassed by the little bit of decomposition that he has, the little bit of rot that he has. But still, nonetheless, how could you do the whole process? The process involves either taking out parts of the body or swallowing down a little bit of spices. How could you allow that type of a process to happen to Yaakov? Especially, as my father brought out before, there's a Gemara in Tainis on Daf Hey that mentions that Yaakov never died. That Yaakov never had a death, that he was considered alive even after he passed away. And really, it seems from the verses that it indicates that. It never says Vayamas. It says Vayigva, he expired. It says Vayasev Alamov. But it never says that he really died. How do we explain this? There is a tremendous tshuva. What I mean by tshuva is, the question was once asked to the Note of Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau was asked the following question. He says, a person, there was a patient who had kidney stones, and they were operating on the person, and the person died while on the operating table. The question was asked, it had already happened, they already had done this, but they wanted to know from Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, if that happens in the future, are the doctors allowed to keep going with the process of the surgery? Open up the body in order to see what's going on in there for them to learn more about science to utilize that for the future. Now, normally we hold that you're not allowed to have an autopsy, but are you allowed to do it if this situation arises in front of you, like this case, where the person is already having a surgery? Are you allowed to complete it? Are you allowed to continue doing what you're doing in order to see what's going on? Are you allowed to do such a thing or not? That was the question that he asked, that was asked to Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau doesn't like it. He said at the end of the day, you shouldn't do it unless somehow you know that there's something that you can do quickly and then sew it up afterward. But Rabbi Yecheskel Landau did not like it. He brings down both sides and he says he doesn't like it. He says, if there was somebody right there in front of you who you could help by doing this autopsy, then he would allow it, but he wouldn't allow it in any other way. But he stops at that. Rabbi Moshe Sofer quotes that Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. And in the middle of this tshuva, where he speaks about all these things about whether or not you can do an autopsy, he brings down this question. And he says, so what happened to Yaakov? If we're not allowed to do autopsies, even in order to save somebody in this type of a situation, then how could Yaakov have been embalmed in Egypt if the embalming process involved some type of an autopsy? How could that be? How could we allow it? Chassam Sofer says, one of the craziest things I've heard in a very long time, it's in Shalos Tshuvos in Yoreh Deah Siman Shin Lamed Vav. He says, quoting the Zohar, that Yaakov Avinu was never embalmed the normal way. And he was not mummified in the normal mummification process of the Egyptians. Instead, what ended up happening was, they never opened up his body. It says a crazy thing, and I don't know, I've never checked this up, and I don't know how to even look this up. It says, when a person passes away, their esophagus closes, and there's no way for food to go in through the regular mouth. But instead, you become like you were before you were born. And all of us remember, I'm sure, because it wasn't that long ago, when we were in our mother's stomachs, we didn't get food through our mouths. We got food through our belly buttons. So we got food through that area. So he says, the Chassam Sofer, that when a person passes away, this hole closes, but that hole opens up again. And what they did was, is that they pumped the body filled with spices from the belly button of Yaakovinu. They didn't let anything go down his throat. It all went through the belly button and went through his body that way. I don't know what they did, a reverse vacuum. I have absolutely no idea, but they allowed it to go through that way. But, the Chasam Sofer says, that's not going to help. If there's anything in the body already, if the person had something that was, he needed to go to the washroom beforehand, the innards on the inside are dirty. That will cause rot. That will cause something to happen. No matter how many spices you put in, nothing's going to help. Says the Chasam Sofer, that's why the verse tells us, Vayigva. It says the word Gavia. Now Gavia, I know I translate the word perish. The Gemara tells us that the word Gavia is used, the way that that word is used, is to cleanse out the body. It refers to a stomach ailment before death. That a person has a stomach ailment, what happens is that the person, so to speak, cleans out before he passes away. He has a stomach ailment that allows him to empty out those parts of his body, so that when he passes away, there's nothing dirty on the inside. That's the word Gavia. So thus, at the end of Yaakov's life, he had this stomach ailment. He was cleansed throughout his inside. At that point, he died, or whatever we call death by a person like Yaakov. There was some type of a process in which he's no longer available for us in this world. When he's no longer available for us in this world, his soul is no longer in his body, fully alive like it was before. His esophagus closed up, the belly button opened up, and they were able to put the spices in there, and thus he had a totally different embalming process than any other person ever had. So he wasn't like a mummy. They didn't wrap him up in bandages all over. I know that would sound unbelievably cool, and to have a movie of such a thing, as Yaakov Avinu being buried in Aras Machpelah as a mummy, would be tremendous, but that's not the process that happened to Yaakov. He wasn't the same as the other Egyptian mummies. However, this is not true by Yosef. Yosef seems to have had the regular embalming process. That was not a choice of Yosef. Since Yosef was the king of Mitzrayim of Egypt, or the second in command for 80 years altogether, he was not given that choice. It was automatic that he would have the normal mummification process that the Egyptians had, and he was given bandages. And in the end, he was put inside a coffin somewhere in Egypt, and that was, they needed to find his body later on. But he literally did look like, or have, the appearance of an actual mummy, which is why he is known as Atzmos Yosef. He says to the brothers before he passes away, Halisem et atzmosai mizeh, take out my bones from this area together with you. He adds it on, again, it's repeated in Parshas Bishalach, Halisem et atzmosai mizeh, take out my bones with you. It seems, an unbelievable little idea, it seems that Yosef, although he was mummified, and although he had the mummification process happen to him, Hashem did not allow it to remain as a normal mummy was. We all know that a normal mummy has regular flesh. It's just covered by bandages, and it remains somewhat whole until they take him out of the airtight space that he's in, and then he starts to go down a little bit. Yosef, on the other hand, Hashem allowed the flesh to rot the normal way, for the bandages to come off, and that he was only bones, so that he wouldn't have that mummification process, so to speak, affect him. And then they ask why that had to happen to Yosef. What did Yosef do to deserve such a thing? But it seems that he switched everything around, and that Yosef was a mummy, but Hashem didn't allow it to remain that way. That's how the Chasam Sofer learns up what happened over here and how it all went down. Why would the Egyptians do this? What was their purpose and what was their point in allowing there to be mummies, and what were they doing? The Egyptians were very into magic. Now, whether magic is real or not, that's a discussion between our great Rishonim, between the Rambam and the Ramban, and whatever it was. But it seems that Egyptians wanted very badly to have discussions with the dead, to speak to those who had already passed away, and to deal with them, to have dealings with them as if they were still alive in front of them. What we call that is Doresh Alamesim. There's a Medrash that tells us, it's a Medrash Rabbah, but I can't remember where offhand, and I didn't write it down. The Medrash Rabbah tells us that until a person has a body that decomposes a little bit, until that decomposition, his soul remains firmly attached to the person's body. Firmly attached. Which means that a person's neshama, his soul, can't go up to the heavens to get his reward, to get his punishment, or anything like that, until the body starts to rot. The Egyptians had figured that out. And they embalmed the body and preserved the body so that the soul would remain intact, attached to the body itself. So when you wanted to ask something, when you wanted information, all you had to do was talk to the body, talk to the mummy. And the mummy's soul would be able to answer you, would remain by the body itself. Whether they fooled themselves into thinking this way, whether it was act real, whatever it is, somehow they convinced themselves this was the process to be able to speak to the dead. And that's why they made them such holy places, such these either the pyramids or a special place for them to be, in order to keep them around so they'd be able to ask them anything that they wanted to know. And that's where they got their whole process of magic, kishuf, everything like that was all from their discussions with the dead, and that's what they had. Which also explains to us the famous curse of the pharaohs. There is a famous idea, now I know it has been debunked a little bit by those shows that, what show, I don't remember what it's called, that show that debunks all fake things. What's it called? No, not CSI. They go through all these processes and they go through Mythbusters. Thank you. Mythbusters. So there is a show called Mythbusters that has gone through a bit of the curse of the pharaohs. There is no absolute truth to a lot of the stories they tell out there. Reb Yohanan and Eichitz, the famous Gaon, one of the most brilliant people that have lived in the last few centuries, Reb Yohanan and Eichitz has a famous piece in his sefer Yaros Devash in Chayuk Aleph Simon Zion, in which he goes through and he says, the reason why the mummies are so potent and the reason why their powers are so potent is because their neshamas are still connected to their bodies. And he brings down a story that when, I don't know who it was, but a country was bringing out certain mummies from Egypt in order to put into museums all throughout their country. I would assume it's England, but I don't know. Remember, this is mid-1700s. I don't know who this was. When they were bringing out in a boat, Rabbi Yonatan says, we all know what happened. That there was a massive storm at sea, and they emptied all the mummies into the sea in order to get rid of all of them. And when that happened, when they were able to empty all the mummies in the sea, all of a sudden the storm stopped. And they were able, everything was calm, and they were able to get themselves out of it, and their ship was able to come to shore. And they claimed the reason why was because of the mummies. Because the mummies had a curse on them that you shouldn't take them out. Now, there are some absolute crazy curses out there. The famous curse of King Tut, Tutankhamun, who was the boy king, is one of the most famous of them all, in which they go through everything that happened, that out of the 24 people that were around at the excavation of King Tut's tomb, all of them but two were dead within the next 5 years. All of them. Now, the person who had started the excavation died the next day. There were a lot of crazy little things that happened with everything there. Two people survived King Tut's, the original excavation. There were those two people. One of them was on a TV show. I brought the wrong sheet with me, but one of them was on a TV show in order to talk about it and said he's not afraid of the curse whatsoever, and he was never afraid of the curse, and he was never worried about anything that would happen to him, and as he was leaving the TV show, was struck by a car and was killed on the way out. It's a famous story. It's a famous story. This was actually corroborated, by the way. This was the real one. I just forgot the name of the TV show. There's things like that. These are nutty stories. But the famous one by far is the one about Amun-Ra, the princess of Amun-Ra. Ra, as we all know, is the name. Well, I don't know if we all know. It's only known if you go through Egyptian lore. So why would you have gone through Egyptian lore? But Ra is the name of the Egyptian god of the dead. That was Ra. So the princess of Amun-Ra apparently had a sign above her tomb when she was taken out, in which it said, "Awake from the sleep in which you are, and you will triumph over all that is done against you." That's what it said on top of her tomb. They said that cute thing, a cute little thing. I'm sorry. "Awake from the sleep in which you are, and you will triumph over all that is done against you." So there were four people in charge of this excavation, the expedition that had taken out the princes of Amun-Ra. Out of those four people, the line is that one, I have no absolute corroboration on these facts because there's no names given for this. I've read this in six books. Six. So you'd think that six books are pretty good, but I guess if one book took from the other, it doesn't really matter how many books you have. One of the four disappeared. One lost a limb of his body. One of them died. And one lost all of his money in a bank crash. That all happened within 3 years of when they had found the taken out the princess. An English businessman bought the mummy, and immediately his wife was in a car accident and his house caught fire. He donated it to the British Museum, and the British Museum does have a copy of this, but it doesn't say it was the Prince of Amun-Ra. There is something that has in the British Museum in which there was banging, crying heard at night from the area where the Prince of Amun-Ra was being held. It was never in a full section up above, but there was things like that. There was a person who took a picture of it who died the very next day. Died the very next day after taking a picture of this. Lots of crazy stuff behind it. A collector bought it, and a cultist told him that he should get rid of it. So he sold it to an American archaeologist, shipped it to New York, and gave it to a Captain Ernest Smith in 1912 to take on the Titanic to bring to America. You gotta love a story like that, because it sounds amazing. I mean, you can't say anything else when you hear a story like that. Like, how could that? I mean, it screams at you, this has to be a fake. But you have to say it, because there's no way. There is no record whatsoever of any mummy being taken onto the Titanic. I did check that up completely. However, there is no record at all about what Captain Ernest Smith brought onto the Titanic. So the way to get around that is to say, well, it doesn't say because Captain Smith didn't have to write down what he had. I find it hard that he somehow was able to get a princess of Amun-Ra through customs in America, but maybe they were a lot looser than they are nowadays. Nonetheless, to be honest with you, the story may just be just that. It may be a story. Nonetheless, the curse of the pharaohs is a famous curse, but the reason why there's such a concept of the curse is because if their neshama is somehow connected to their body, if their soul is still connected to their body even after death, this soul can take that revenge, so to speak. This soul has a power beyond the regular body, and that's possibly the explanation for it all. So to go over everything that we've spoken about today, we had a lot. We, number one, went through how the pasuk seems to say that both Yaakov and Yosef went through the embalming and the mummification process. We explained through Rashi and then going through the Me'am Lo'ez that the mummification process was different here than what it was by normal Egyptian mummification processes, that this was done through spices and a different method and maybe not the same way altogether. We spoke out the Chacham Sofer, who brought down that the way that it happened was not through the top, through the mouth, but rather through the belly button, and explaining that Yosef was a real mummification process, that it was different. He also explained about the Gevia, that idea of Gevia. We spoke out also, what else did we do? The Orach Chaim, of why Yosef allowed this to happen in the first place. We gave three reasons altogether why he allowed it to happen in the first place. To Yaakov, out of honor, so the Egyptians don't think of him as a god, and then possibly because there was such a thing as Rat before Har Sinai, even by a person of Yaakov's stature. And then we ended by understanding Rav Yonas and Eibschitz's view of why mummies do have this power and what it means and what the Egyptians were thinking in making these huge pyramids and this mummification process of keeping them preserved for as long as possible. Thank you so much, and